£43 billion. The industry covers things like renewable energy and low-carbon technology. That's the latest. I'm Elizabeth Williams.
Hi there. Hope you're still out there, still listening. If there's anything you'd like to call in about, don't forget that number. It's 0114 2425 200. So, I think before I continue with my awkward questions, I think I'd like to do my on the soapbox. Well, it's not on the soapbox, it's on the box. As I said, I got a little fired up a couple of weeks ago. The Sheffield Telegraph was carried a couple of articles. There was one article saying, yeah, we've got to get behind the city, stop council bashing. And there was an article on the front page from John Mothersoul, the chief executive of the council, saying, yeah, come on, support us, we're doing great. And so I penned a letter, and here it is today on the middle of the letters page with the big headline, Creative Adventurous People in City Frustrated by Poor Decisions of Council. It's a little bit dramatic, but basically, I mean, the letter says, I'll read the first bit. Says, following the calls by John Mothersoul and Nancy Fielder on March 23rd, I must both agree and disagree. We do need to get behind the city, but there is a difference between the city, its people, and the city council. The city is filled with creative and adventurous people, who are champing at the bit to develop shops, parks, businesses, schools, etc. But they are, for the most part, frustrated by the council, who are responsible as a body, regardless of political leadership, for making a whole host of poor decisions over recent years, which has, and I have to admit, it's been compounded by government funding cuts. So no pointing the blame at anyone in particular, but it's just happened. So how do residents, that's you and me, how do we engage properly so that we can have our say and, if necessary, actually help do something about it? And as I said, I've been looking for ways to help, but therein lies the problem. We have in the city some big institutions, but seem to have almost a monopoly. So there's the City Region, the Enterprise Partnership, the Engineering Employers Federation, the Chamber of Commerce, both universities, and all of these are large, monolithic organisations that have got more than enough power to distribute money or clout or bend the ear of politicians, etc. And when one of these fails because somebody decides to reorganise it out of the world, it's replaced by another organisation with pretty much the same people. So we're getting more of the same. And what we're actually talking about in the city is needing some sort of transformation. So I'm afraid, I think, many of those people that are in there will have to go, even just it's just to signal a change to the city. So my point is that within the city, within its boundaries, there's students, there's lecturers, there's lots of intelligent people, there's lots of creative people. Engage with us all. We should be able to do something. I was at a fantastic meeting with some like-minded souls from the Royal Society of Arts the other day. There are brains in there that you would not believe. There are many of them could solve the world's problems 10 times over. Engage with these sorts of people. And as Einstein said, to solve a problem, you've got to change the frame of reference from that in which the problem was created. So we have to look at it differently. We have to do something differently. Otherwise, we're going to get the same solutions or just get more of the same. So yes, our problems were created long ago. They all to do with steel, all to do with coal, and them not being here. But we need new ideas, new people, but we can do it. Tell us where to sign up. Don't just tell us to follow. So that was my point. That was the letter in the Telegraph today. I must admit, there are a few people from the odd political party who've been quite interested in that. But if you've got any, views, if you'd actually like to get in touch, if you'd like to even start some sort of group, if I don't know, whatever, if you have a feeling about that, please do call in on 0114 2425 200. So, that's me down off my soapbox. It could be a soapbox, but it's probably a soapbox. I think it's time for our second track from REM, and then we'll have some more of those awkward questions that you can ask people.
Mm-hmm. Slide. Hang on.
REM there and a track called Everybody Hurts. Hopefully, we'll be squeezing one more track from them in before the end of the afternoon. But for now, some more of our sort of awkward questions, or once not necessarily awkward questions, but big questions that you can... that you can use sort of in meetings and things like that. Try and get different responses from different people. So we had how many did we have before? We actually had 5 questions. I thought it was 4, but it's actually 5. So number 6, how can we empower people at every level, not just those at the bottom? Because people think, oh, empowerment is for the poor people at the bottom. Depending on your size of your business or your organisation, there's people, poor people sandwiched all the way through. That, and especially if you've got lots of hierarchies, they feel like they're in straitjackets. They have to conform to, the structure charts. They have to conform to their job descriptions, God forbid. So, how could you actually empower people at all levels to be able to make decisions quickly? So that you don't have this sort of paralysis when something comes in, there's a query about a purchase order or something, and it has to be referred to 10 different people and whatever. You know, the sorts of things that happen, the sort of thing that frustrates you when you ring up about your gas bill and it's passed on to the whatever team and then it's passed somewhere else. So you know the sorts of thing. How would you empower people? Now, if we wanted to double our revenues, what is the most important thing, the single most important thing that we would need to change, we must change? And how would we do it? How would we do that if we wanted to double our revenues? Some people might say, well, that's impossible, but anything's possible. It's just what you do to actually get there, to actually do it. Conversely, what about if we had to cut our cost base by 50% but maintain revenues? We need to cut our cost by 50% but we want to keep the same amount of money coming in. What could we do? How could we do that? Do we just double our prices? Do we move into a different product range? What is it we would actually need to do? Or maybe we couldn't quite do it. Maybe we could almost do it. But what would we have to do to make that shift in our business? What sort of thinking would we need? What would we have to do differently? And here's a good one for you. If as an organisation we had absolutely no fear of failure, what should we try? What should we try and do? What should we have a go at? If we felt no fear whatsoever, we had no problem with risk. Personally, we had no problem with failure. Organisationally, we had no problem with failure. If that wasn't an issue, if we just didn't fear failure at all, what would we try? What would we do? I mean, I'm not sure we could think of ridiculous things, but not necessarily ridiculous things. But things that, because we don't want to appear to fail, that we think, oh no, we won't do that. What would we do? Or what would you do? And think about all of us in our little niches and things. We all follow rules. We say we can't do that, but we follow them. Our competitors follow them. So which are the big ones? Which are the most I suppose they are important. But which ones have the most effect? Which ones are the most constraining? What if we broke them? I mean, you could ask the question, why do we follow them? But what if we broke them? What would happen? What would it allow us to do? How much of an advantage might we get over our competition? Interesting idea. So, if we were maybe newbies, new boys in the marketplace, and we had no huge sort of customer base. And we decided that we wanted to be number one in the marketplace. What would we do? If we were just the new boys on the block, we wouldn't have all these ideas about rules and regulations and things. We would just do something and say, look, we're going to be number one here. How would that work out? What would we do? So think about those for a minute. A couple more coming up. Our final track from REM. I'm sure people will remember this one. It's a track called Man on the Moon. Enjoy.
A little ghost for the offering. Yeah, 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 yeah. Here's a truck stop instead of St. Peter's. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Andy Kaufman's gone wrestling. Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, Andy, did you hear about this one? Tell me how you locked in the. Man on the moon.
Man on the Moon there from REM. That's the third of our three tracks. I hope you enjoyed them. Well, I did. I hope you do. If you have any requests, if you like, then why not pass them on to us, and we'll see what we can do. Just before, well, it's nearly time to go, not quite yet, but there's a couple of things that on my list of questions, a couple more that, well, before we get to the end of the list. So how could you make all of the people within your business feel and act like entrepreneurs? If you were a small, if you once were a small business owner and you had that sort of excitement and that immediacy, being able to make changes and do things and react to customers and make a deal and all the rest of it, how could you make your employees actually have that feeling now? And more importantly, still have the business that you have. How could you do that? And finally, what are the customer needs and the pains of your customers at the moment which aren't being met? How well do you know your customers? Do you actually know the pains they're having? If you're serving them, how much time do you spend talking to them? And whether you're delivering parcels or whatever you happen to be doing, do you know the pains that your customers have? Could you actually solve any more of them? And if you are, what do you think their pains might be in 2 years? Don't forget, in reality, if you have people supplying you or you're supplying other people, then you are actually an extension of their business. So although you're not part of that of the actual money-making process there, you're an extension of their business. So what you do to them or what they do for you, that affects your livelihood and your employees. So what will all these pains and things be in 2 years' time? It's very important. So I'd just like to leave you with two actual thoughts. One is the one that was number one on the list, which is how can we surprise and delight our customers? Think about that. How can you do that with your customers? And the other thing from Dave Brailsford, which was the single biggest and possibly cheapest marginal gain that we can make, is to actually have a smile on our faces. So please carry on smiling for the rest of the day. This has been me, Derek Cheshire, Coffee with Derek on Iman FM 103.1 FM. I look forward to seeing you next Thursday afternoon, same time, same place at 1:30 p.m.